Welcome to the 3PL Summit. Today, we are joined by Goran Shastri, Managing Director at Lincoln International. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
I am very excited about today. This is something that we have seen explode over the past few years during the pandemic. And then all of a sudden, it kind of came to a screeching halt, and that would be the world of mergers and acquisitions. But before we get too far into that, let's get some background on you and how you got started at Lincoln International.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for having me. My background's fairly easy. I've spent my entire career in M&A and the vast majority of that at Lincoln International. Before that, I started out at Citigroup and their investment banking divisions in Chicago and New York. And I can't believe it. I've actually just celebrated my 20th anniversary at Lincoln a couple of weeks ago. So it's been a fun ride. When I started at the firm, we were one office in Chicago with less than 30 investment bankers. Today, we're over 1,000 investment bankers and 22 offices in 16 countries and advise on over 300 transactions each year. So it's been fun to be part of that growth. And I currently lead our global transportation and logistics group, which is another very active group of about 20 bankers that are dedicated to the sector. We do have global coverage of the industry. My partner, Dirk Engelman, who leads our group in Europe, sits in Frankfurt, and he and I combine on the vast majority of the deals that we do in the space.
So you guys basically have just maintained that real mom and pop atmosphere of a nice, small, little, intimate company.
Yeah, it's incredible that despite the growth and the size, the secret sauce in terms of our culture and being able to provide very deep sector expertise across a number of geographies remains kind of the guiding force for the firm. And there's many more individuals like myself who have started their career at Lincoln and grown into becoming a partner at the firm. So we like to say that's really kind of the proof is in the pudding with the number of people that decide to stick around.
I mean, that kind of speaks volume in and of itself. But jumping into the mergers and acquisition spaces, which you guys are very obviously intimately familiar with. So during the pandemic and shortly after, we saw an insane rise of mergers and acquisitions. I feel like every day they were there was a new someone bought someone else and someone else was buying something. And it was just constantly. But now it's kind of slowed down. So what does that mergers and acquisitions landscape look like today?
Yeah, great question. You've characterized it well. It was a little bit of a frenzy in 21 and 22 where there was extraordinary tailwinds, some of which and maybe a large part of it was driven by the pandemic. Equally, we saw significant headwinds last year in 2023, and I'm sure you've seen some of the data, but it's pretty striking if you look at the slowdown that we saw last year with an 80% reduction in deal value and almost a third less transactions in terms of overall activity. But as you mentioned, there were certain pockets within the sector where we continued to see activity, particularly led by strategics who took advantage of a lot of private equity groups sitting on the sidelines, just given the challenges in terms of the interest rate environment and the higher cost of capital, where you did see some larger, higher profile deals get done, which is encouraging, but certainly the rationale for those deals was much more airtight than what you may have seen in the past few years, where everyone kind of was in this drunken frenzy, if you will. You did see some big deals occur last year, and including some at the end of the year, which gives us a ton of confidence that, you know, we may be seeing kind of a light at the end of the tunnel here. You know, you did see Ford and Omni finally come together. UPS was acquisitive, buying MNX Logistics. It's great to see GXO reemerge from the sidelines with their acquisition of PFS. And Ryder continues to be very acquisitive, buying a number of businesses here, including IFS and Cardinal most recently. You know, but what we are seeing is that groups are being much more thoughtful in terms of where they're spending their time in terms of M&A. It's just there's very little room for error, given the high cost of capital here. And what we are hearing from a lot of our private equity relationships is that they are encouraged that it's going to be a better environment to make deals in 24 and moving into 25, as we've seen a lot of normalization in terms of the freight rates. We're starting to see a little bit more stability in terms of volumes, which should lead to a better environment and hopefully just a better alignment in terms of valuation expectations between sellers and buyers. You know, one other interesting stat that I'll share with you, which I thought was pretty alarming, was in 2023, of the deals that went to market, less than a third of them actually got done. So there was a high rate of failure, oftentimes driven by either company performance or, more often than not, just this gap in valuation expectations, which I think is starting to narrow, which should promote a better landscape to make deals happen.
I feel like we've seen that in a couple different industries, like, you know, with that kind of, oh, I think everything should be worth, you know, $7 billion, but really, you know, maybe it's not. And I think that that's kind of the, like, really high valuations we saw over the last few years are now kind of getting readjusted with reality as everyone just kind of, you know, returns to that level set normal. Personally, I am here for a nice stable spot rate and a nice stable freight market for the rest of the year. That would be great. We can get away from the lowest lows that we've seen. Sure. I think just moving towards regularity is my win.
That move towards regularity has taken a lot of time, partially because this is probably the most unique freight cycle we've ever seen. And that was driven by the fact that you saw such a significant increase in capacity during the pandemic. And there were a lot of carriers that were sitting on a lot of cash in reserve that allowed them to weather the storm much longer than they typically would. So that capacity overhang is still there. And you're still seeing a little bit of headwind in terms of rates. But in January, there was certain pickup in rates. And I think that capacity is starting to exit the market, which will be helpful in terms of finding more rational behaviors in terms of both rates as well as stability in terms of being able to actually be conducive for M&A.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I'm ready to go back to normal. It's great. We don't have to have highs and lows. But that being said, something we saw a lot at the end of 2022 and 2023 was, and throughout 2023 was, you know, people kind of doing acquisitions for capacity. So when capacity was tight, they were like, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to do an acquisition to grow my business. I'm going to do it to source some capacity problems. What are kind of those trends that you see emerging for 2024? Is it kind of more of the same, or is it more of those strategic, this is how we're going to merge these two businesses together and, you know, become like a $10 billion empire? Sure.
Look, there's still some of the acquisitions that are being driven by increasing scale, but the vast majority of the activity we're seeing is being driven by diversifying businesses. So having that volatility that a lot of the larger players in the market experienced over the last few years have taught very painful lessons, that it's important to be able to diversify the business into areas that help soften and insulate kind of the more inherently cyclical parts of their business. So, for example, if you look at a lot of the shipping lines, they have moved very significantly into contract logistics and other value-added logistics in order to be able to not only provide a higher value prop to their customers, but importantly, provide more stability and higher margins in certain pockets. So when I say that, think about the Maersks and the CMAs of the world. CMA recently just bought Wincanton in the UK, which is a nice contract logistics player, which is kind of a big departure from where they have typically played. You're also seeing kind of some of the other more asset light players in the space also recognize that in order to be more relevant and stickier with their clients, they need to invest behind the assets. So you do see certain things, and that's kind of a big part of the riders' move to go and get Cardinal. It allows them to control more of the assets and provide more reliability of capacity. And while there is more capacity in the market today, we know disruption is going to be the constant theme within the supply chain. We're seeing it with everything that's going on in terms of some of the geopolitical conflicts that we have in the Red Sea, what we're seeing kind of in the Suez Canal, Panama Canal. You're going to have to constantly be nimble. And in order to do that, being able to go out there and diversify your business is what's going to drive kind of success and separate the winners from the losers.
I think the term resilient supply chain might be beat dead and like kicked down the block 10 feet because it's so true, because, you know, any moment anything could happen. You know, we see it in the Panama Canal where, you know, certain ships have to offload stuff and it's taking longer to go. And then who knows what's going to happen with everything in the world? Like anything could happen at the moment. We saw it with COVID. So I guess, do you see a lot of, is there any kind of main issues you see kind of, whether it's, you know, environmental, because we're coming up on some of the storm things, or any kind of those geopolitical factors that could potentially either positively or negatively impact that M&A space? Obviously, you can't predict the future, but best guess.
Well, look, I think, unfortunately, we're going to continue to see those types of events occur, whether it's weather related, whether there's new regulations coming on the labor front, technology. And, you know, unfortunately, the geopolitical conflicts seem to be intensifying, which does impact trade in a very significant way. But what I think that does is really underscore the importance of being able to work with players that have scale, have tech enablement as a core theme and central focus of their business model. And what that will lead to is not building scale for the sake of scale, but building scale to be able to be nimble, to your point, where you're able to anticipate some of the changes that are occurring. There are things that you can't anticipate, but being able to deploy technology, digitalization of the supply chain is very important. So smaller players are going to struggle to do that because it's expensive to do. So you're going to still see more and more smaller players look to join the larger platforms. And that really creates a ton of opportunity, not only for the larger corporates that are being acquisitive, but more specialized private equity groups, the ones that have really developed strong resources and executive talent. So think about the Greenbriars, the Audaxes, the Ridgemonts of the world, where they're going to continue to invest behind platforms where they can invest in things like people, processes, and technologies that will drive the success in adapting to that change. So to me, that disruption creates opportunity, and it's going to result in a lot more investment coming into the supply chain over the long term.
I think that kind of speaks to the overall trend of, you know, if you are a shipper or a carrier or a 3PL or anything that services the supply chain, if you're willing to change and adapt and kind of think on your feet and move quickly, then overall, it's going to be like there's going to be opportunity for growth. There's going to be opportunity for advancement. The world's going to be your oyster. But for those who are kind of stuck in the this is how we do things, this is how we always do things, I do think that, you know, the writing's on the wall and it's only a matter of time before those guys are either, you know, acquired or forced to sell or, you know, even potentially go bankrupt.
That's exactly right. People have to be a little bit more intentional and thoughtful in terms of how they're navigating these choppy waters and be more strategic in decisions that they're making, whether you're a big player or a small player. The cost of capital is high. So the ability to go out there and fund all growth initiatives, unfortunately, no longer exists. You have to be thoughtful and pick your spots wisely.
Yeah, this is, as we've definitely seen from the down market, it is not the time to try and spread yourself thin, just kind of pick what you're good at and stick with it, because ultimately that's gonna succeed the most, that's going to be the most successful. But we have a couple minutes left, so one hot question for you.
Sure.
What do you think is going to be the sector or the segment of the logistics industry that is the most ripe for mergers and acquisitions?
Yeah, well, I'm going to cheat and give you a couple here because I think it's hard to pick just one. But I do think we'll continue to see a lot of interest and activity within the contract logistics market as you think about providing a higher value add of service. I do think there's going to continue to be a ton of investment that goes into areas like healthcare and pharmaceutical logistics. While e-commerce certainly doesn't have the same buzz that it did a couple of years ago, certainly that will continue to be the longer term area of focus. You're seeing UPS invest in technology like Happy Returns. We actually sold a business to DHL last year called Manta, which was more technology to fuel e-com fulfillment. Reverse logistics is an area where, unfortunately, we don't have as much of a scaled solution as is necessary, given kind of how much of that proliferation of the online sales that occur. So I think there will be continued investment there as well. The good news is there's no shortage of areas to invest. I do think freight brokerage, it's a great time to consider investing within differentiated freight brokers that have really proven themselves in the downturn. And actually, the downturn has actually been a good thing for those that actually have a level of differentiation and have built out unique cultures where they're going to take share from those smaller players, and you're going to see them really continue to ride the wave.
I absolutely love that. I've long since said that if anyone who has a solution that's scalable for reverse logistics can just consider themselves a billionaire immediately, because
that's right.
You know, we desperately need one. That being said, where can anyone find you outside the summit if they have more questions?
Absolutely. You can find me. You can shoot me an email, gshastri@lincolninternational.com. That's gshastri@lincolninternational.com. Or give me a call at 312-506-2738. Look forward to connecting.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, and enjoy the rest of the summit.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mary. Take care.